Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA. Just in. Well, first off, Jackie McMullen, are you in Boston today, Jackie?
I am, sir. Yes.
Jackie, just in and still going on the book tour for Basketball Love Story. How's it going so far?
It's an interesting thing in this world of no bookstores. We do book signings. Like tonight, I'm doing a book signing at Tony C's, named after the late, great Tony Conigliato, in the Seaport in Boston, which is like the kind of fun area where like Fidelity is and John Hancock and all that. And, you know, I'm doing a book signing later at another restaurant, and I might be doing one at a gymnasium where, you know, 1,200 parents and their kids come through for AAU tournaments every weekend. It's just so funny how the industry has changed. Right.
Well, you got to get in with Jeff Bezos to be in the bookstore these days. The Basketball Love Story is rolling right now every night on ESPN this
it
week.
Is.
Although I don't know when people are going to listen to this, but it'll be available on ESPN Plus. Nobody even gave me that promotion. I just did it on my own. How about that for being a corporate shill? Joining us from Dallas, freshly back from China, the Far East, Shenzhen, I believe was your last stop. It's Band McMahon.
Pause for the memory of my introductory theme song.
It is, unfortunately, a memory. How was, first off, this is what I want to ask you. So you've been back for one day. All right. I've been to Asia.
A little less than, yes.
Okay. I've been to Asia handful of times, three times. Jackie, you've been to that part of the world and back. You were to Australia,
right.
I think last year. So was that this year?
It was this year in March.
It's
for 2 weeks.
To me a brutal return, and I'm not just saying this for your well being. I have a point, but I'm going to ask about your well being because that's the kind of guy I am. How are you feeling?
It's the jet lag's definitely tougher this way than the other way. I'm a poor plane sleeper, especially flying coach for 15 plus hours.
That's the second time he's mentioned that, Jackie.
I noticed that. I wasn't going to say anything.
Just in case I have to go again, trying to get a little upgrade there. I got home last night, tried to stay up to a reasonable hour to get back on the clock, and then I slept like 14 hours. So, I'll be back on the back on the run again tomorrow. But today is going to be a chill day. Pick the girls up from school, hang out with them for a little bit, and and then the regular season grind is just around the corner, as you guys well know.
That's the point that I'm making. So the Sixers, and look, I'm not saying that I understand the importance of developing China in the NBA, and these chips are going to continue no matter what I say. But this is a tough turnaround for the Sixers. So they come back, and I assume that they got back Tuesday sometime. They play
one
week.
Both teams left right after the game, so yeah.
So they got back sometime Tuesday. 1 week later, they play in the first game of the season against the Celtics. Now, if you're out there and you've never traveled from Asia, or, you may say, well, it's a week. They're pro athletes, grow up. I'm not saying that they're not going to be able to run up and down the court. I'm just saying to play top level basketball, it takes some time. There is a recovery period. And if you don't believe me, go ask the Warriors. This happened last year to them. They went to China. They had to play on the first night of the season to get their rings, which, it was a happy night. But they will tell you that they were off for the first couple of weeks of the season. They were not quite themselves because
they blew a big lead that opening night, by the way.
And it was a big game win for the Rockets.
Rockets came back to beat them, yeah.
Tillman Fertitta running around the court, brand new owner. That was what I remember from that night. I just think that I'm going to put a little red dot next to that game on Tuesday, Jackie. I assume, are you going to be there? Is it in Boston or is it in Philly? I don't
know. It's in Boston. Yeah, I'll be there.
Yeah, and they're on the road.
Oh, you'll
for the
be
first
tired.
Game.
You'll be tired of seeing me, Brian. Because I'm going to have to do all the Sports Center stuff till we fill in our empty slot in Boston. So everyone will be tired of me by the end of Tuesday, I'm pretty sure. Chris Forsberg, what a way to go out, though. Great piece on Kyrie's crossover. That was a great piece.
love, much love and much offering of success to Chris Forsberg, who
you bet
went to Comcast Boston. Andrew, is there a possibility that I would do anything else than make a pitch here for ZipRecruiter? Because every single show that I listen to is supported by ZipRecruiter, which makes me a big fan of ZipRecruiter because they bring you great content. They bring me great content. I don't know about you, but they bring me great content. And so I appreciate that. And so therefore, I must completely support ZipRecruiter because ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful matching technology scans thousands of resumes, identifies people with the right skills, education, and experience for your job, and actively invites them to apply. So you get qualified candidates fast. That's why ZipRecruiter is rated number one by employers in the U.S. So right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive address. Exclusive, ZipRecruiter.com/collective. That's ZipRecruiter.com/collective, collective, because just in case you don't know how to spell it, ZipRecruiter.com/collective. ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire.
Do you think ZipRecruiter has hired every job in America now? Because it does make sense that you said that they sponsor borderline everything that we listen to now.
Yeah, like, I mean, frankly, I don't even know who else I would go to but ZipRecruiter. Like, if I had the need to post a job, I honestly don't know of another company that I would go to. I don't know of any other companies because they have infiltrated my world so much. And so, to me, they are the only option.
Where do I have to go again?
I'm glad you asked that, Andrew. I really appreciate that. ZipRecruiter.com/, that's that little button on the upper right-hand corner of your keyboard, /collective to hire the right person. ZipRecruiter.com/collective. Jackie, I'm a little concerned about how the Sixers are going to start the season. I think they play a couple of tough games in the early going. I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe, I don't know. What do you think, McMahon? How do you think that they're going to come back from this?
Well, look, obviously there's the travel and they're done with their preseason. So all they have for the next week is to, kind of ramp up for that game, prepare for that game. But I've got concerns for the Sixers that aren't related at all to,
go on
to going over to China. I'm telling you, the Markel Fultz situation has the potential to be a major, major problem for the Philadelphia 76ers. He is struggling. And, Brett Brown has put him into the starting lineup. And you can't just, with a guy where confidence was clearly an issue last season, whether you want a chicken or egg injury, confident, whatever it was, confidence slash, the yips, it was a huge issue for him. I think they put him into the starting lineup kind of as a, hey, we believe in you type of move. And now you have Brett Brown, after Fultz was just awful in the last preseason game, and he's pretty mediocre throughout the preseason. I mean, but he fouled out in 19 minutes. He's clearly scared to shoot the ball. I mean, there was one situation where, and this ain't exactly the classiest move by Mark Cuban, but it happened. He catches the ball wide open in the corner in front of the Mavericks bench, and Cuban yells, "Shoot it! Shoot it!"
Now, you tweeted about this. I'm glad you brought this up.
Yeah, because Mark Cuban's just such a classy guy all the way around. Don't even get me started.
Jackie, we're going to clear out for you in a little bit. you're going to get your chance to dunk on Cuban, we promise. And on that particular case, he took two dribbles and stepped into a little 12-foot pull-up and made it. But, like his last foul of the game, transition, J.J. Barea goes down to runs back into the paint and basically says, look, if you want to take a pull-up jumper, have at it. Well, Fultz ends up getting a charge, right in front of the charge circle, and that's it for him. But, it was after the game, Brett Brown, we're asking him about, okay, why'd you go to he starts off saying, we're going to have to look at some things some things with the rotation. And then Keith Pompey, the fine beat writer from the Philadelphia Inquirer, asks, hey, You know, is that what you're talking about with not starting Fultz for the second half? Was that related to his foul trouble because he got four in the first half? He says, no. You know, I want to take a look at that. And essentially what he's saying is it looks like they're going with the starting lineup from last season to start second halves, but he's committed to keeping Fultz in the starting lineup to begin games, which I've never – like, have you ever seen a team that has a first-half starting lineup and a second-half starting lineup? I've never seen that.
Not on purpose.
Not a great idea. I'll tell you what, it's not a great idea if you look at the numbers with Redick in the starting lineup.
Yeah.
I think, Brian, you and I were talking about this. They outscored opponents by 268 points in 601 minutes, the best plus-minus of any lineup in the league.
And so, not even
and
close Redick looked, by 99 points.
And Redick right, looked even great in China, am I right,
yeah.
McMahon?
No, he,
10
I mean, he had
the one
of
the games,
and the Redick situation was interesting because, you know, he had the – and I firmly believe, and I'm talking to the 10-cent producer who actually shot the video, he firmly believes it was a tongue-tied, slip-of-the-tongue thing where he accidentally said, or, you know, I'm not going to say the exact word, but what sounded like a racist slur that's offensive, certainly to Chinese people, came out of his mouth when he's wishing China a happy Chinese New Year. Anyways, people remember that. He was booed every time he touched the ball with the first game. He's 10 of 10 from the floor, 7 of 7 from three-point range.
I mean, really really kind of amazing because he's got to be under immense scrutiny. I mean, JJ, regardless of what happened there, I don't think we think that JJ has a bad heart. He used to being hated on by the crowd because he's from Duke, frankly. But I mean, this is a whole new thing. I'm sure he was not looking forward to this trip because of it. And he goes in there and frankly has one of the best shooting games of his career, circumstances. I realize it's an exhibition game, but still.
But that's JJ. I mean, JJ's impervious to pressure, I feel. I've always thought he's one of those guys that's like, bring it on. You're going to feel me even more. That's how he's not the kind that's going to, you know, gesture to the crowd and flip them off. I don't mean that. But he's a guy to me that whenever he's just all about positive self-talk, as so many of the great shooters in our game are. They have to be. If you're Ray Allen, if you're Reggie Miller, if you're J.J. Redick, and I'm not putting him in the same category as those two, even though I think he's a very fine shooter, you have to believe every shot's going in and you don't care what anybody else thinks. And that's always
I agree with you, Jackie. I agree with you, but, you know, Tom Haverstraw from the Bleacher Report, our former colleague at ESPN, just did this piece talking about how JJ gave up social media because he felt like it was such a negativity, and I think that, you know, that's been a challenge to him.
But don't you think part of that was his personal life and some of the things that were mentioned? That's a whole nother kettle of fish, as my mom
said. That's probably, yes, I would agree.
Well, and also it was an addiction to it, not even necessarily the, you know, oh, here's what people are saying about me in my mentions, but just the fact he felt like, and I think we can all, or at least Wendy, you and I, maybe, Jackie, you've been able to resist the Twitter temptation. But feeling like you got to be on there every 5 minutes, feeling like you got to know the latest, you know, FOMO, that whole thing. But no, I mean, look, back to basketball, like you guys mentioned, that starting lineup was the best lineup in the league last year. And to go away from that to start games, because, you know, what seems to me to be an attempt to boost Fultz's confidence, which has not worked. And I'm telling you, that Fultz deal, man, it's premature to write off a 20-year-old kid who clearly has some talent, but the fact that he's scared to shoot jumpers, the fact that he was always considered a poor defender and frankly got, you know, roasted pretty good on that end of the floor, in those two games in China, and you look at what they gave up, Jason Tatum plus a Kings pick that's coming that's, you know, probably going to be, what, top three, top five? That deal could be the trade that tips the balance of power in the Eastern Conference for years to come.
So, you know, we'd heard a lot about how Fultz had improved and was better and was in a better headspace. And, you know, I'm not there every day, but would you say that, you know, McMahon, would you say that the early returns on that are not? You did not see much of a difference.
I mean, better than last year when he, you know, sat out the vast majority of the season and had the plug pulled on in the playoffs and you know, watched from the bench despite being healthy. Sure. But do I look at saying, ooh, you know, look out. I feel like there's been a lot of positive things kind of said and written about Fultz, and they're based on hope and not evidence.
Mm. You know, like, and look,
well, that's a report from China, Jackie. Now that's a report from.
That is a report heard around the world. The shock heard we around the world.
I don't know if it's a shocker because those games were televised.
No, shot.
I said shot. Oh, a shot. Okay. Shot. Well, yeah. I'm not afraid to take shots.
That's true. So I do want to talk
jello
about
shots?
The Mavericks.
No, all right. Never mind.
Can you get jello shots in Shenzhen?
I would recommend it.
At Hootie. Okay, go ahead. Let's just move on. We gotta move on.
I do want to talk about the Mavericks, and I want to talk about Luka Doncic. Did you hear that, Jackie? Doncic.
I got it.
I struggled on draft night.
I know you did. Jackie was there on draft night.
It was a rough one.
It was like everyone has those. It was like me trying to say Johns Hopkins once on Around the Horn. We laughed for days because I couldn't say it. Now I can say it in my sleep. So there you go.
Well, we will talk about Luka Doncic. McMahon, mm-hmm. do you want to update us on the event that took place over there with Mavericks personnel? And then I think Jackie has something she wants to say.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll just give the update here. The team photographer, Danny Bollinger, who's been there since Cuban was there and, you know, was a friend of Cuban's from before then, there were allegations that were made during the investigative process against him about lewd comments, sexual harassment in the office, you know, improperly propositioning women. And he was pulled from the trip early on in China, flown back home, fired the next day. And again, these were allegations that were made during the investigation, but he was not included in that investigative report. They became public because the Dallas Morning News talked to women who made the allegations against him and reported them. Now, again, the Mavericks knew about these. The investigators knew about these. The league office was briefed on these. But they didn't become public until the Dallas Morning News was reporting, and no action was taken until after the Dallas Morning News is reporting on the allegations.
Jackie?
All right. So, I ask you, Mark Cuban goes on television. I was there that day. I think you were too, Brian, weren't you?
No, I wasn't. I left the day before.
I was there.
I was there with you, Jackie.
He was in tears. Yes, I remember that, Tim. No, I know that, but I know you were there because you and I discussed it. There were crocodile tears. There were promises. There was denials. I didn't know all this. And then the grand pronouncement that he had hired Cynthia Marshall, who was going to clean this all up, who was going to make it all better. They were going to be more vigilant about it. They were going to take care of things. Now, I had some issues with that. I'm not going to rehash all the issues I might have had with that performance. But now this happens. Now, if you are the owner of the Dallas Mavericks and you've just taken the hugest PR hit that I can think of since you've owned the team, and there have been some others, but this is the biggest one, and you pledge on national television to everybody that now you're going to do it the right way because you've hired Cynthia Marshall and it's going to be done the right way, okay? Why on earth would you ever put Danny Bollinger on your plane to China? Can you explain that to me? In the environment that you are operating under, with the scrutiny that you so deserve, why on earth was he ever put on that plane? Why was he not in the report? If they knew about this, if the investigators knew about this, why on earth did he ever make that trip over here? That's just such bad optics, not to mention stupid, okay? Now, on top of that, now the reporters who reported on this, they did their job, they did a good job, they go to Mark Cuban and say to him, why was he here? What about this? Why wasn't he in the report? And he has the nerve to say, well, by you asking all these questions, you're suggesting that Cynthia Marshall's not doing her job, and I find that offensive. Well, stop right there. Nobody's talking about Cynthia Marshall, Mark Cuban. We're still talking about you. And the fact that you even tried to palm this off on the person you just hired to clean this mess up, to me, is just inexcusable. And, you know, I'm a fan of Mark Cuban's, or I was. You know what I always liked about Mark Cuban? He challenged you. He was a straight shooter. You say something, he comes right back. I love give and take. I like guys who are straight shooters. I like people who challenge. I got a kick out of, at times, the way he challenged the league. And sometimes I think he was right. And sometimes, a lot of times, I didn't think he was. But I enjoyed all of that. This, to me, is not enjoyable. And to handle this the way he has just makes me wonder, what are you doing? What are you doing? And you know what that makes me think? You didn't take this nearly as seriously as you'd like us all to think when you were on television, feigning tears or holding back, you know, all those little saline drops that you put in your eyes. All right? That's how I feel about it.
I'll just say that I felt like, you know, I don't exactly know what was investigation. I have not covered the story, but I will just say, as somebody who's in the league,
don't cop out with I haven't covered the story. I'm not copping out today.
I'm not copping out. I'm saying, I actually think it makes the league look bad, Jackie, because it undercuts the way they dealt with this and the final investigation. Because what the league basically said is, the Mavericks made mistakes. They acknowledged, and the reason that we're going forward and not penalizing them with anything more than money, and it was a big financial thing, but not necessarily to a billionaire, but
right,
you know,
a drop in the bucket for Mark Cuban.
But the reason that they gave Jackie that the punishment did not affect anything on the court or draft picks or something that I thought we were going to see, which was a suspension of Mark Cuban, which would have been the harshest penalty you could maybe give to, you know, to suspend Mark Cuban and say you can't come to games would maybe be hurtful than any other owner, because Mark Cuban is more invested and involved within games than any other owner. The league basically said that they were so proactive and that they were so reactive and that they addressed the situation and they cleaned it up. That was their explanation. And I don't even really necessarily care about what Cuban said. I care about sort of what the league did, because ultimately it's the league whose responsibility it is to take over and police the situation. And so for this to happen, basically what it looked to me like, and again, I just say that I wasn't on the story, so I can't say for sure this is what happened, but it looked to me like was that there were women who, once they saw this final report, couldn't believe that this guy was not involved, and they stepped forward to the Dallas Morning News to tell them, hey, we can't believe that this guy wasn't involved. And so it undercuts the validity and the authenticity of the league's role in this. And I feel like the league made a major mistake in not making this, not making sure every loose end was investigated, tied up, and nailed down before this happened. And that is what I take away from it.
Right, and I agree with that. And quite frankly, Cuban and David Stern had an adversarial relationship, and Stern was tough on Cuban, and Cuban was a pain in Stern's butt, and, you know, that's all well documented. Adam Silver has taken a very, I don't want to say hands off, but he has treaded lightly when it's come to Mark Cuban. There have been times when, you know, Stern would have certainly come down with a significant fine, where Silver either didn't fine him or, you know, there were light fines that were not announced. And I feel like there have been cases where, you know, Cuban has bullied Silver, to be honest with you. And I was very surprised that Cuban wasn't suspended here, because that is the way to punish him. And again, nobody here and nobody, none of the women who work for Mark Cuban have accused him of anything direct, and he has not been accused of any kind of sexual harassment, any type of improper conduct, any of that. But it's like in, you hear it in NCAA, you know, where it's a lack of institutional control.
Right.
And at the bare minimum, that happened here. And then, so essentially what we're hearing and from Adam Silver is, yeah, hey, we knew about this additional allegation, you know, these additional allegations, that, you know, they weren't put in the report because the attorneys who conducted the report put out a statement in the Morning News basically saying, hey, the report was about the people who have been accused publicly. If they were accused anonymously to us, we decided not to make those allegations public. And, you know, so it's like, okay, so you told us details of stuff that we already knew. But again, I thought it was very light not to have Cuban sit out any kind of games. And $10 million is a ton of money, but not to a billionaire.
Okay, but let's get back to
Cuban, that's how you do it.
Let's
not watch games.
That's all fine. But I'm getting back to the original point here. Danny Bollinger is a friend of Mark Cuban's. He was a friend of Mark Cuban's before he started working for the Mavs, and I'm going to assume he's a friend of Mark Cuban still. Okay? You knew of these allegations. Please don't try to tell me Mark Cuban did not know of these allegations.
Of course. Yeah, he knew.
And he made the decision to bring this guy on the trip. So what does that say about Mark Cuban? I don't know why we're letting Mark Cuban off the hook here, guys.
Again, I think it undercuts the concept that the situation is rectified.
I'll say. All right, I've got that out of my system. And because Mark Cuban's powerful and famous and rich, everybody's like afraid to take him on. Come on now, we're all better than that. We're better than that. All right, let's continue. I'm off.
I'm glad you said it, Jackie. Luka Doncic, I kind of get a feel that all year long we're going to be watching Luka Doncic, and there's going to be – the temperature is going to rise in Atlanta as the season goes along is what I'm saying. And Sacramento, for sure. I understand why the Suns picked Ayton, although there were a lot of – I don't know about a lot. There were teams out there who have told me they would have taken Doncic number one. You got to be careful listening to guys after the fact. I mean – everybody out there has got a Giannis Antetokounmpo story where, you know, if A, B, C, D, E, F, G happened, they would have ended up with Giannis. You know, there's some Donovan Mitchell stories out there. But I do believe that he was number one on some teams' draft boards. But I understand why.
I'm certain he was number one on the Suns head coach's personal board. The guy who.
But I understand why they took Ayton.
Slovenia. Okay.
But I understand why they took Ayton. I mean, it's not an indefensible.
And Ayton's looked good this preseason, too. So, you know, I mean, that's...
He has. He's actually looked phenomenal, but it's hard to know. So what were your impressions of Doncic over there before we talk about it some more?
Well, I mean, in the second game, he was great. I mean, he came out, knocked down three threes. You know, when he gets out in transition, his vision is just unreal. You know, when he isn't huffing and puffing and tugging on the bottom of his shorts trying to catch his breath. I mean, he's got a chance to be an instant impact player. Rookie of the year front runner according to the GM poll. I think that's certainly, I think he's definitely got a strong chance to be that guy. And I think once he, really starts taking diet and conditioning and summer preparation seriously, you know, that's going to determine whether he's a superstar in this league or just a good player.
He's young enough and early enough in the program, and the Mavericks have state-of-the-art conditioning, mental health, state-of-the-art everything, as we know. So if that's, in fact, the only thing holding him back, don't worry. That'll get taken care of. If that's the only thing that's holding him back, he's going to be fine. Because you can't, you know, how many players have we seen come into the league one way and 2 years later you don't even recognize their bodies? I mean, Kevin Love, right? Kevin Love is one.
Yeah, no question.
Look at Lonzo Ball.
Sure. We've got examples all day long. Once you get into the NBA system, if you will, and that includes the off-season conditioning programs and the dietitians and all these things. So, if that's all that they've, you know, if that's the only thing that's holding Doncic back, he's, looks terrific to me. The vision, you nailed it, Tim. When I watch him, it's seeing the court. It's just, you know, it's what we were talking about yesterday, Brian, with Ben Simmons, same thing. Players who can see the whole court like that. And I remember talking to Kuz about it, one of the best ever at it, this idea of peripheral vision, which a word that Kuz laughs because he can't even really say because of his speech impediment. And yet he has the best peripheral vision of anyone. And I'm not making fun of Kuz. I love him. And he makes that own joke himself. It's a gift. That's not something you can teach somebody, and it's, I don't believe anyway, and I should go back and ask who's this, but I don't believe it's something you can train yourself to do. You either have exceptional peripheral vision or you don't.
There's guys who have tried it. There's certain drills that you can do.
Right,
Yeah, there's been some technology with some I know
glasses.
Yeah, and like running backs, I think, have... Mm-hmm. have worn those glasses and they use light and stuff like that to try to teach him. But I don't know if there's much data that says it's much you can do. But think about, so is he still 20 years old? What the crazy thing about it to me is I feel like I've heard about him for so long that I'm having difficulty computing in my head that he's still so young.
He's been a pro since he was 15, and not just like playing in some second division. I mean, he's been playing for Real Madrid since he was 15. He's 19 years old.
He's only 19.
He didn't turn 20 until February 28th. He's a 19-year-old seasoned professional, and he's got such a huge advantage on the rest of the rookie class because he, look, playing 4 years for Real Madrid is such a different level than playing one season in NCAA. I mean, Real Madrid would go undefeated in NCAA, and this kid was, you know, he led Real Madrid to two championships last year. You know, was the EuroLeague MVP, the youngest ever do it. He's the most prepared in terms of basketball rookie that we might have ever seen. And again, the conditioning thing, that's something, obviously the Mavericks have a plan in place. He's got one heck of a role model there if he wants to take it, in Dirk, and just in terms of how seriously Dirk has taken all that stuff and how that extended his career, allowed him to reach his potential. But he has unteachable things. I mean, he's a strong 6'8" dude who sees the floor like very few guys that size ever have. I mean, we're talking obviously Magic, LeBron. I mean, but it's that type of a vision size combination. And when he gets the ball in transition, I mean, it's going to be fun. And I tell you, he's also formed a great kind of instant chemistry with Dennis Smith Jr.
That's what I was going to ask you, how he's getting along with his teammates. It's an issue for Europeans.
It hadn't been
not
all
if you pass the ball. Not if you pass the ball.
That helps.
Not if you keep getting them buckets. And Dennis has really embraced the kid. They live in the same apartment complex. You know, they play Fortnite together all the time and all that kind of stuff. And Dennis and Dorian Finney-Smith are, you know, they're best friends. And Dennis has kind of brought Luka into that group. And they're kind of like the three amigos or whatever, and there's been, you know, I think just looking at it when they drafted Luke, it was kind of like, ooh, you know, okay, Luke's going to have the ball in his hands a lot, he's going to be the guy, how's Dennis going to react to that? Where Dennis has been like, man, this is awesome, I don't have to necessarily be the guy who worries all the time about running the show, who's getting touches, let him play to his strengths in terms of, and he's going to still have the ball in his hands a lot, but a lot of times, you know, he'll be catching it off of Luka initiating the offense, and he's catching against a rotating defense, and he can, you know, attack off that. Now, Dennis has to be at least a solid catch and shoot guy, which his numbers there were pretty good last year. He was bad shooting off the dribble, but in terms of instant, kind of the early chemistry, the instant chemistry, I think it's beyond what the Mavericks could have hoped for. I mean, they've struck friendship.
Because Carlisle doesn't hand out, you know, needless praise. It's not really his MO. What's Carlisle saying about him?
I think, if anything, Carlisle's trying to, at this point, trying to temper expectations. But he loves him. I mean, he absolutely loves Luka. Now, I'll be honest with you. I am working on a story about Luka that's going to run next week before the opener. And I am asking a lot about, you know, conditioning, because that's the thing that they on draft, starting draft night, they cited as, hey, this is where we can make these huge strides for him. And then he kind of spent a lot of the summer, you know, playing Fortnite and having a good time on a boat off the shores.
Yeah, they kind of let him go because his season was so long. He played all the way in. They won the Final Four. Did he play with the Slovenia national team this summer? No, that was last
year. He did not
summer,
do that. No, he didn't play. He didn't play summer.
But last year they won the Euro Cup whatever.
I mean,
they kind of gave him
Real Madrid. Yeah, it was right.
They kind of
like 2 nights.
Yeah, they kind of gave him the summer. You know, I understand they gave him some time off. I don't know. Maybe that affected him. Maybe he enjoyed his time off.
I think it's a great move. That was a great move.
Yeah. I mean,
it really was.
I thought that he would do more conditioning wise this summer than he did. But, you know, even when he got back, he didn't come back to Dallas until after Labor Day. So it's early September. And the reports I was getting was, man, this kid ain't in great shape, and he's the best player on the floor in pickup games. And it wasn't like, God, he's in bad shape. It was like, geez, just wait until he gets in shape. It's not like he came back just fat and sloppy, but again, he didn't make the strides they hope, and there's a lot of room for, I was going to say room for growth, but probably, you know, the other way around, room to kind of become sleeker and more athletic. But I tell you what, like, one thing Rick points out is, you know, functional quickness, he's pretty damn good. I mean, there's one play in particular where, you know, he got by Robert Covington, who's obviously a really good wing defender in the NBA, got by him for a layup. Rick is very much looking forward to coaching Luka Doncic this season and for a long time to come.
Andrew, I'm excited this week because Fleetwood Mac is touring, and Mike Campbell, one of my favorite guitar players of all time, who unfortunately won't be touring with the late, great Tom Petty anymore, is touring with Fleetwood Mac as the lead guitarist, and I'm going to see them. But I'm going to tell you that as I speak to you, this concert is in 2 days, and I don't have tickets yet.
Super uneducated. Is Fleetwood Mac still the original band with Stevie Nicks and I don't even know who else?
You know, Lindsey Buckingham is not on this tour, and Fleetwood Mac is a very long story that we don't have time for in this ad read to discuss. But what's important is that Mike Campbell is with them. They're singing a couple of Tom Petty cover songs with Stevie Nicks, who's an honorary member of the Heartbreakers. And I want to see them, and I literally just found out that they're coming basically to my neighborhood in 2 days, and I somehow I missed this. I wanted to see them, and I made it a point to say, let me see what their tour schedule is, and I just missed it, and I just overheard literally yesterday Fleetwood Mac is coming 45 minutes away from me tomorrow, and I looked at their schedule, and it's the only time I can see them. So obviously it's sold out, okay? So what do you do? Well, I actually wasn't that nervous about it because of SeatGeek. SeatGeek is an app that I have used for over a year now for when I need to get tickets. Obviously, you can use SeatGeek in a lot of different ways for a lot of different events, but I have used it for concert tickets in the past, and I am looking forward to I might have to do, as soon as this podcast is over, get onto the SeatGeek app and see what's available, because I'm going to that show. But the listeners to this podcast, I think I've already taken advantage of this, so I don't think I qualify, unfortunately. But the listeners who haven't taken advantage of SeatGeek yet, you're making a mistake. But my listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase from the SeatGeek app. You download the app on your favorite, telephone device, and then you go to telephone device. You download it. If I have to tell you that, I mean, I have to tell them that, Andrew, because they're listening to this on an app, right? They know how to get apps.
I mean, I don't know. Download onto a telephonic device, so maybe telephonic you have device. To mention that.
Yeah. You download the SeatGeek app and you enter the promo code HOOP. That's HOOP. And in all caps, just for the hell of it, put it in all caps. That's promo code HOOP for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. They have a good slogan, Andrew. I like it. I wonder what their other slogans that they rejected were, because I'd like to hear the process they came through to get this slogan. Because, you know, we try to write things in my world, and sometimes they don't go right. SeatGeek, life's an event. We have the tickets. That's a great slogan.
Ooh, I got chills. It's like a Mad Men line.
Seriously,
but
I'm not saying it just because it's a pitch. It's genuinely a great slogan. So anyway, go get that app. Promo code HOOP, H-O-O-P, for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. I'm going to see Fleetwood Mac. So we had a shakeup in the Western Conference this week with really disappointing, not that there's ever a non-disappointing injury, but DeJounte Murray.
Bad one,
Man, it was just, it looked, I think that they were really concerned. I don't know if they 100% knew until they had the MRI, but if you saw the play.
Oh, we've seen it so many times. Didn't you?
It's so deflating. Yeah, man.
And, you know, we had to fill out the, I'm sure you had to do it today too, the, expert picks for player of the year, rookie of the year. You know, he would have been my choice as the most improved player. It was no doubt in my mind with the role he was going to have with the Spurs that he would have had a chance to be the most improved player in this league because he was already so good anyway. And with Parker gone, and, you know, they were ready to hand him the keys.
And not only that, you know, you pretty much, as a player like that, you define your situation your third year, because after your third year is when you try to, with your third year typically is your leap year. It doesn't happen all the time, obviously, but we see great players leap in their third year. And then are in position, ask for your contract extension. I mean, if you're DeJounte Murray, you're thinking, okay, Kawhi is gone. They're retrofitting the team a little bit. The door is open for me. I'm going to go out there and have a great year, and I'm going to go ask for huge money next summer. And it wasn't unreasonable. And it doesn't mean that he can't recover, but it's just such a blow. But my point on this is also the Spurs, you know, the Spurs had to deal with some drama, but over the years, but generally they've been okay. And now they're getting quite the karmic turn. That's going against them.
Remember all those years ago when Pop insisted he was going to retire the same time Tim Duncan did?
Oh man.
Wishes he did.
Yeah. You know what, crazy? Walker, the fourth.
That's what I was going to say. So they were all excited about this kid they drafted. I mean, you know, look, the Spurs are realistic. They weren't out there saying the guy was going to win Rookie of the Year, but they thought he was going to be, like, they were comfortable not matching Kyle Anderson. Not that Kyle Anderson's a difference-making player, but one of the reasons why they didn't match on Kyle Anderson and they traded Danny Green is because they were like, we really like this kid we drafted. We think he's going to be in the rotation for us. So he has a foot injury now, and that is worrisome as about any injury you can have for a young player. So he had surgery last week, and then DeJounte Murray blows his ACL a couple days later. And so now I just don't know. I mean, I was really thinking that the Spurs were maybe going to win more games than they did last year.
Well, just because borderline playoff team now.
Now, and that's why I'm asking about, you know, the West. I mean, you know, I hate to say, like, if I was some of those teams that are bubble-esque teams, and, you know, frankly, I put the Lakers in there. I think the Lakers are a 6-7-8.
I think the Lakers are stronger than that.
I agree with you, Jackie. I think LeBron, you get LeBron, you're a playoff team, period.
I didn't say they weren't a playoff team. I just said they were like a 6-7-8 team.
I don't think they're bubble. I think they're in that 4-5 range.
Well,
what do you want to do? The game? Let's play the game. You going to play the game?
In the Western Conference, if you're in the 4 spot, you're a bubble team. I just think that the West changed a little bit this week because I don't think the Spurs are going to be as good as they were. And that loosened up, I think, some of the tightly packed way the teams are together. And I hate to say this, but I don't know what other way to say it. It's good news for a few teams, and the Lakers are one of them.
You know what, though? Okay. Well, Jackie, you mentioned we did the – and Wendy, I don't know if you do those preseason predictions since you're so allergic to predictions. God, you are such a little – I mean, you get away with anything. I bet you when you go overseas, you fly first class too, but that's neither here nor there.
Oh, you know he does.
Man, he's up in the – it was hard to walk by the – you know, because it's like the little pods where you get the –
He doesn't do that. I'm business class, right? Right, Wendy? Business class.
I mean, you know, this is between my agent and ESPN, but,
He's first class. Agents don't do business class.
No, it's not first class. But
well, I was white trash first class, which means I was in the exit row. But anyways, when we filled out those predictions, I put Pop as coach of the year because I still think that the Spurs will find a way to make the playoffs, and if they do, and obviously Pop's widely recognized as the best coach in the NBA, but if the Spurs, after all this, are still a playoff team, I think he's going to get Coach of the Year due, which I believe has only happened once in his career, if I'm not mistaken.
I think that's right. Does this end with, like, Derek White, the guy they drafted last year? who's
seriously.
Like, does it end up with him, like, being a most improved candidate and, like, him having this incredible year?
They do things. This is what they do, right? Yeah. This is what they do. But let's just play the game because it's always fun to play.
Let's do it.
The West. So Golden State and Houston, no particular order, not wanting to offend anybody. Let's throw the Jazz, the Pelicans, the Nuggets, and OKC. There's 6.
I'm not letting you just throw the Pelicans in there.
Okay. All right. So I'll take them out. So we'll agree that Golden State, Houston, the Jazz, the Nuggets.
Let's slow down.
Agree on the Nuggets?
Let's slow down. Okay.
You're so reasonable.
Golden State and Houston. Okay, let's put them off to the side. They're in. I think the Thunder are a playoff team, too.
Jazz, Thunder.
Jazz, and Thunder.
There's four.
Okay, so that's four. Now, we all agree that those four are playoff teams. Okay, now we get into the bubble. Sorry, I don't mean to offend anybody, but now we get into the bubble. In my opinion, you guys can tell me I'm wrong. So I think you have New Orleans, Portland, Denver, Minnesota, Lakers, Spurs in the bubble. And I'll listen to McMahon
Butler's in Minnesota.
Depends.
I'm not trying to put Mavericks.
What about the Grizz? You're going to throw them in the bubble? The Grizz?
I think they are tough teams to beat on a nightly basis, but they are going to be very good 11th and 12th place teams in the West standings, if that makes any kind of sense.
This is why the Celtics can chortle all the way home, because the Kings, these are the teams the Kings are going to play, you know, 50 whatever times.
No one's saying the Kings are making the playoffs.
And not only that, but they flattened out the lottery odds, so if the Kings win nine games.
That was just a little aside. The Celtics' concern is the Kings. It's a top one protected pick, and so
That's what I'm saying. But the lottery odds have flattened out a little bit, so to de-emphasize tanking. So your odds of winning the lottery as the number one team are lowering this year.
I think that pick gets moved anyway.
By the end of the year, I think that pick gets moved in a big blockbuster deal, because that's the way Danny rolls.
What if Zion Williamson is dunking? The world
on
fire.
Maybe not that. So we got Golden State, Houston, Jazz, the Thunder. So let's each take a turn putting another team in there. I will put in the Nuggets. That's five.
I'm not going to argue.
I think the Nuggets look really good. And I think when they get Isaiah back, and I think that'll help them.
So that's five. So now we got the Pelicans, the Lakers, the Spurs, Portland, Minnesota.
I believe in the Pelicans.
It is LeBron. LeBron and four guys from the YMCA.
I agree with you. Lakers are in. No particular order. Now we're up to six. So we've got four teams to make two spots. We got Pelicans first, Portland, and Minnesota.
I think the Pelicans are in. I know that they suffered some losses, but I think you're going to see a beast season from Anthony Davis. He has found a place. You know, he is finally at ease playing center. I don't love counting on Mirotić, but they have a style of play that they now do. They're going to be very fast. And I just think Anthony Davis is going to be a beast. And, you know, assuming Drew Holiday is healthy, I see them as being a playoff team.
Well, no, I love Mirotić. And Jackie, to your point there, they were great. But Rondo was the guy who was at the wheel. The drop off from Rondo to Elfrid Payton to me is immense.
I agree, but
it is big.
I think they have two studs who are dominant on both ends, and they have a style of play, and you're going to have a hard time going into New Orleans, running up and down the court with them. I think they're going to be dominant at home. Do I think that they are a less potent playoff team without Rondo, playoff Rondo or big game Rondo? Yes, I agree. I don't see them going to the second round, but I see them as a playoff team.
Well, yeah, and if you get Jrue Holiday, as you say, if he's healthy, he that's going to help you. And you got
Julius Randle. Not everybody loves Randle, but I think he's going to be like. Look at that big man rotation.
Yeah, he's serviceable.
I love him in that role. That role, come in off the bench as a he's going to put up numbers off the bench. He's going to be in the sixth man of the year conversation, I would think. Oof. Although I went with a homer prediction and gave Dirk the nod, but Randle's a great
fit. Oh, did you really?
There.
That's funny. You know, I did a homer on that. I got to tell you, I did a homer. The only person I voted for from Boston for anything, I voted for Terry Rozier.
Terry's got a chance. Yeah. And the thing with the Celtics is, which candidate do you choose from their ridiculously deep bench?
I think it's him. Because they'll rest Kyrie. They're going to be really careful with Kyrie.
What do you think? Don't you think Tatum? I'm not making a prediction. Don't you think Tatum will be a most improved type candidate?
I think he was so good in the playoffs last year that people have almost jettisoned him out of that. Like, in other words, I think he's already people envision him as a top 10 to 20 player. So
I, I just think that a lot of people are going to like, oh, Kyrie and Gordon Hayward are back. Jason Tatum's going to be like Mr. Third Man. And I'm like, he's going to be Mr. One Man.
He's going to lead the team in minutes. He'll lead that team in minutes. I picked Brandon Ingram for my most improved.
That's a very sound pick.
Yeah, LeBron's going to make sure. He's either going to improve or LeBron's going to beat the living tar out of him.
All right, so you're split on. So where are you on the Pelicans? I feel like they're in.
I'm in. I think they're in. Four, McMahon? Five, six, and Lakers. So we got Golden State, Houston, the Jazz, the Thunder, the Nuggets, the Lakers, the Pelicans. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. We have. You can take one team between the Spurs, Portland, and Minnesota.
I'm taking the Spurs. I'm banking on Pop with two proven all-stars. Now, DeRozan and Aldridge got to figure out. I know they're both mid-range guys. Got to figure out how that's going to work. But give me the best coach in the league with two proven all-stars, one of whom has a huge chip on his shoulder and a lot to prove. And I'm betting on
I would say. I would say that they'd make the playoffs, but they got to straighten DeMar DeRozan out if they expect to do anything in the playoffs. He needs to be straightened out. Just saying.
Well, I felt great about them a week ago.
Oh, well, really we wouldn't be having this debate a week ago.
I know. I thought they were going to win more games a week ago. Now I'm a little shaky, but it's a compelling point, McMahon. It is two all-stars and a great coach. And I hate to – I'm not putting down Portland. I mean, Portland was the number three seed last year.
I know, right?
Did we believe it? But did we believe it?
Well, and then they followed up by just getting not only swept but spanked by the Pelicans in the playoffs. I mean,
I'll tell you what. I'm not putting them in one of my eight, but I'm going to add another team to the bubble. I'm going to add the Clippers to the bubble because I just think that.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. You know what? We talk about all these great rookies. The buzz around Shai Gilgeous, Alexander, Doc Rivers flat out told me, if he's not a star, I'm going to be shocked. That's how excited they are about him.
Yeah. So, okay. So we talked about Trae Young, Luka Doncic. There's another point guard thing here. Cleveland had the eighth pick. They were in love with Colin Sexton's makeup in terms of his competitiveness. They just loved it. And he came in to them and just had a kick-ass workout. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander refused to work out for them. And they passed. And so the Clippers were elated. The Clippers were kicking around. You know, they had back-to-back picks.
Right.
Jerome Robinson was the other guy they took. They were kicking around and putting those picks together to move up because they were a little bit concerned that they wouldn't have Shai fall to them. They were elated that he was there. Now, of course, I know every team is going to say, we got our guy. I understand that. The Knicks took Kevin Knox, and they're over the moon about him. Like, they're not having any, second guessing right now. But that's another thing going forward, that the Cavs had the choice between those two guys, and they couldn't get all of the data that they wanted on Shai. And so they wanted to take Sexton anyway. They might have taken Sexton anyway, but that's one thing to look at going forward.
But he shot – what did he shoot in – what's he shooting in preseason, around 40%?
Yeah, and that's the knock on him.
That's the issue.
Yeah, but he's
I like him, though. I mean, I saw him live. Yeah, I enjoyed watching him play. He plays hard. He plays with confidence, which that team needs now because they need that out of the point guard spot. So and he'll make some noise.
I agree. He'll be a fan favorite. So are we saying that we think Portland and, Portland on the outs?
You guys are saying that. I'm leery on the Pelicans, but I'm overrating the Rondo impact. But Rondo to Peyton to me is a drastic
drop. Hey, listen, you are on the record as not being a Rondo guy. So you're
well. Rondo stunk in Dallas, and it was a terrible fit. But he was and actually, this is something I've talked to Rick Carlisle about. For Rondo to be successful, you've got to have a great fit. You've got to have shooters around him, like the Celtics did. And, last year in New Orleans, they surrounded him with shooters. I mean, I thought Rondo really took off when they went and got Mirotic and, shooters and tempo. And it was kind of a perfect fit for him. And I also think that Rondo just, and this is funny to people who maybe you've followed him throughout his career, but I thought Rondo was such a huge positive influence on that roster, and not just the young players, but some of the young vets. I thought he was a great influence on guys like AD and Jrue Holiday. And, you know, just as the, you heard them talk so much about how great he was with them in terms of prep and kind of, you know, scout reports and telling them what was coming and all that kind of stuff. And I think they're going to miss him immensely.
That's a fair point. I just think that they've got a top three player, and teams with top three players typically make the playoffs.
Have the Pelicans always made the playoffs with Anthony Davis?
I don't think he's been a top three player. 2 years ago, he didn't make the All-NBA team. It cost him $25 million bucks.
He's been injured a lot, too.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you know, all this changes at the drop of a knee. But, there's some frustration in Portland that they did not improve this offseason and that they let some guys walk. And Portland was in the boat. Charlotte was in this boat, too, where they invested in some guys in 2016. Mm-hmm. And some of them were their own guys. And it's just biting them. Like, everything went the Warriors' way to get Kevin Durant in 2016. And there was a trap that was set for some of these teams that fell into it, and Portland fell into it, and they felt the pinch 2 years later. And with the arms race on in the West, letting some guys go and not being able to really load up because you're so overly committed to Evan Turner and Myers Leonard, etc., you know, they spun their wheels a little bit, and I just don't know if you can afford to spin your wheels in the West. But I'm not really saying anything bad about them. I just don't know if they can compete. And look, the difference between the Pelicans and the Blazers at the end of the year may be skin tight, just like it was last year.
Right.
They were separated by like a game or two in the standings, and the Pelicans were clearly the better team. And, you know, there's going to be some disappointed fan bases, and there's going to be some people who get fired in the West this year, but not because they're bad. I mean, I think the Clippers could win 43 games and not make the playoffs and might finish 11th. You know, so, all right. Well, this was spirited.
I think it's interesting. We are all in agreement that Timberwolves, after their one.
Oh, yeah, we didn't even talk about
the last decade plus, what, it lasts 13? Well,
there's just an asterisk there because we just don't know what's going to happen.
Well, and here's the thing. It's almost the worst case scenario is that they don't trade Butler and they've got that drama engulfing.
Oh, I think they're going to trade him. I think they're going to trade him. But one of the things that's
going to trade him to Miami. It's going to happen.
Yes. One of the things that's irritating me, though, is that people are, and I'm not going to defend the way that the Wolves do business, but it irritates me that people are like, oh, you know, they're a mess or whatever. Because they don't want to take the poo-poo platter does not mean that they're a mess.
No.
Trade the guy you were hoping would be your franchise player and do it in 2 weeks. Like, that's a tough ask.
Hey, guys, do you remember when they traded Kevin Garnett? How many times? The Celtics, it looks like Kevin Garnett's going to sell. No, it's dead. No, it's back. No, mm-hmm. It's dead. No, it took like four times. Four times in 2 months before he finally got there.
And you know what? Jimmy Butler, if he ends up in Miami with a promise, wink, wink, of getting a 5-year max, or even if it's just a 5-year deal, even if it's not a 5-year max, it'll have been worth it for him too. But they've got to get Richardson or Adebayo. And I really, if I were them, I would say Richardson or bust. And what I would tell, and just because the Heat don't like the answer that they're getting from Minnesota, doesn't mean that Minnesota is doing a bad job.
Yeah, and you're right. They don't have to be rushed or bullied into an awful deal. They're already not going to get a good return on the investment they made last year. Although, you know, it's too bad for Chicago that Markkanen's hurt now. But still, that trade looks great for the Bulls now if they were mocked for it.
Well,
at the time,
you know,
but I'll say this: the Timberwolves without Butler are a bad team. They were a bad team last year without.
Well, depends who they get back though.
Well, like Richard, there are the analytics dudes out there will tell you that Richardson is comparable in some ways to Butler, and if you get another asset with it that elevates your team in a different way,
yeah. But you get Adebayo too. Adebayo,
I'd be stunned if they got both. But I mean, if I was Minnesota, here's what I'd say to Miami. I would say, who else are you going to trade for? Who else are you? You know, you're holding on to Richardson and Adebayo. Who are you trading for? You know, and I would just hang up the phone. And I don't care if they make fun of me.
How else are you going to get a franchise player? Although, yeah, there's risk there for Miami, too, because, look, he's got those Tibbs miles on him.
Hey, listen, I agree, but I'm just saying, at the end of the day, the Wolves are the team with the player. You know, when they hang up the phone, they've still got the asset. But to go to the point, even if they lose a little bit of ground, like, let's say, you know, if you could quantify it, let's say they get Josh Richardson and he gives you 80% of what Jimmy Butler did. Guess what? They were the 8th seed last year. They get 80% of what Jimmy Butler did. They're out of the playoffs.
Yeah, so, and they were 10-13 without Butler last year.
Right.
But here's the other thing. We're just learning every day. We learn a little more about the drama and the tension that went on with that team last year, because we all kept watching them thinking they are underachieving. Now we've learned about all the tension between Wiggins and Jimmy Butler and Towns and Jimmy Butler. So if you remove Jimmy Butler, add a player that wants to be there and maybe another asset, you don't know what that means. We don't know how that works.
But hold on,
out.
Jackie.
Well, that's Jackie, tension. That's what Miami is banking on. Miami is banking right. on they don't want to sit there playing regular season games with guys that hate each other on the bench. That's Miami's leverage. Right. And that's why Miami probably isn't caving. They want this to get into the regular season and for that to build on Minnesota.
Right.
And that's true in terms of the trade, but in terms of the tension in Minnesota, it's not like you trade Jimmy Butler and the tension's gone, because Tibbs Towns is bad. That is a
well. We all know who's going to win that battle. We already
no
know who's going to win that one.
No question.
It's literally in ink. It's in ink.
But he'll win it after they fail to make the playoffs this year.
Hey, Brian.
Yes, Andrew Hahn.
I just have one aggregatable question for you.
Okay.
Ooh. If it's not Miami, where's Jimmy Butler going to go?
To me, the only teams that are going to trade for Jimmy Butler at any sort of premium are going to be teams that cannot sign him in the summer. Today. Now, if Jimmy Butler hangs on through February, you're talking about a pure rental situation. Anything's possible. But I think it's unlikely that a team is going to pay Minnesota's asking price that can sign him in the summer. And frankly, I want Jimmy Butler on my team. I'd rather have him at 4 years than five. So I'd rather sign him outright anyway. To be
honest.
Good point. Mm-hmm. Yep. Houston, you know, there's some stuff with Houston. I just don't see how a trade goes down there.
Well, and I saw Stefano Fusaro's report, and somebody told him Houston's refusing to put P.J. Tucker in there. I haven't heard that it's that firm, but I do know that certainly the coaching staff does not want to let P.J. Tucker go. And, you know, and it's interesting, and it'll be interesting. I don't know if you guys saw the SB Nation story on Tillman Fertitta, where he's talking in length about Jimmy Butler, which the NBA office might find to be interesting. But, you know, even he's saying in there, they don't want to give up too much for him. And, you know, by giving up too much, if you're talking about not including P.J. Tucker, like, how is she doing that deal?
Well, listen, there could be three different opinions there. Well, first, let me say this, number one. Minnesota... You know, you don't want to include P.J. Tucker? Call me back. Click. I mean, you know, then you don't get Jimmy Butler. I mean, this is how this has got to work.
There might be
three different opinions in Houston. Daryl Morey might look at it and say, geez, if we get Jimmy Butler, this might really be something. You got the coaching staff who loves how P.J. Tucker brings it every day and how versatile he is and everything that they can do. And then you got the owner who's chirping about the luxury tax, which is fine. They're facing the repeater, but he has pretty much said, we ain't paying the repeater, which I get. And they drove a hard bargain with Clint Capella, and they got him at a reasonable number, I felt, to get it done. They got some other guys done. I'm sure Tillman Fertitta is getting ready to go give Jimmy Butler a max.
Well, that's what's interesting. If you ain't paying repeater and you're trading for Jimmy Butler, you're doing it as a rental.
Unless you're planning
to move Harden or CP3, those numbers don't work.
So the owner could see it one way, the front office could see it another, and the coaching staff could see it another, and they all have their point, and they may, like, I'm never going to bitch at an owner about not wanting to pay the repeater tax. The repeater tax is there to not be crossed. So I'm not saying that Tillman Fertitta is wrong, but if you're your GM and your coaching staff, you got to know that you have that line that you can't cross. And I think Jimmy Butler is a. That's a to me. If I were Houston, I would wait and see what happens with Golden State in a year, and you know, just hope for you get lucky this year, and they didn't get lucky last year. Anything so else, that, Andrew?
Quickly, if Les Alexander is still the owner of the Houston Rockets, do they care?
I don't think he's trying to pay that repeater tax either. And look, I mean, I don't think
there were a lot
I think
of reasons.
He would. I think he would.
There's a lot of reasons.
Man, that dude, he is a generous man with his money. And, you know, my understanding is in his stepping away from the Rockets that he plans to give most of his money away.
So Les Alexander.
He's a guy that would have said, go for it. I think he would have said, go for it.
Les Alexander, I think, first off, the Rockets are a very profitable team.
Yes, they are.
They're a top five team in terms of profit. At least they have been the last few years. But Tillman Fertitta used a big chunk of his net worth to pay for this. You know, he has other stuff.
No,
but
I get it. I'm not criticizing him. I'm just saying Les Alexander is in a different place in his life. And
that's true.
But what I'm telling you is, it's one thing if you've got everybody saying, hey, wow, we do this, and boom, we are going to beat the Warriors. No question. It's another thing if you're going in there and your coach is saying, look, man, we've got the offensive firepower. PJ Tucker is an absolutely indispensable part of what we're doing defensively and an indispensable part of the culture of this team. And look, we've got a great dynamic between the superstars with Chris Paul and James Harden. All the questions about how they were going to coexist are laughable a year later. They get along great. That worked out great. Now we're bringing in Melo. You know, even at this age, there's going to be, you know, and some discussions to be had in terms of how he fits. Does he finish? You know, incorporating that ego into the mix. To bring Jimmy Butler to Houston, especially if you're getting rid of such a key culture piece in P.J. Tucker, that's a chemistry experiment that I'm not sure benefits the Rockets, and I'm not sure Mike D'Antoni would be enthusiastic about entering into.
Well, we will see. So let me ask you this before we go. When we convene at the end of next week, where we are going to be into the season, will Jimmy Butler still be a Timberwolf? We're just guessing. It's just a guess, really.
I think it's like Jackie says. He'll be a Heat. Is that even how you phrase that?
That's what Hot Rod Williams. Do you remember that, Jackie?
Yes, I do.
He'll be hot. I don't know.
When Hot Rod Williams signed one of the first quote unquote crazy offer sheets with the Heat, circa 1992-3. And it was like a 7-year, $28 million deal. It was considered crazy at the time because he was a backup. He was like a sixth man in Cleveland. And his quote, I believe, was, as far as I'm concerned, I'm a Heat.
Yep.
So. Well, as far as I'm concerned, Jimmy Butler will be a Heat. I don't know if it's next week or, you know, when it happens. But I agree with Jackie. That's the way that this thing will end up at some point sooner than later.
We'll see if there's a third act surprise, but you guys are probably right. All right, thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective. McMahon, bonus points awarded to you this week for fighting through jet lag, because although I heard you slept for 14 hours, so that might help you, but having been over there...
I haven't slept for 14 hours since I was 2 years old. I'm just saying.
I slept for like an hour on the plane, so, you know.
What was the best movie you watched? What was the best movie you watched on the plane on the way back?
I didn't watch a movie. I transcribed a lot of tape, which is always fun.
Oh, my God. That's the worst.
I got a lot of reading done on a spectacular new book called Basketball Love Story. That's the truth. That's not sweet or sour.
Who wants to watch old Friends and Seinfeld episodes when you can read Basketball Love Story?
Yeah,
and so available on Amazon.com.
And then I did some, you know, Twitter surfing, internet reading, blah blah blah. But yeah, I didn't.
No movies. I just watched the Fred Rogers documentary. It was fantastic.
It's wonderful.
So good.
I also watched it on a plane recently, and it's wonderful.
You know, I watched a couple movies on
Love
the way
Simon.
There.
Watch that too. Also very.
Oh,
good.
Oh really? Is it Love sad, Simon. Jackie? I don't want a sad movie.
No, it's got a very uplifting ending.
Okay. Well, for all you out there who have watched the Fred Rogers documentary, Mr. Rogers is who we're talking about. 143 for listening to the Hoop Collective. Everybody have a good weekend. We'll talk to you next week
All right. Very
when
good.
We will be into the season.